hearts alike. The perfection of love, harmony, and beauty. The only being, united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of Guidance. So let us begin this session, as I think it's good to begin every session, with the purification breaths. And I'd like to offer you the form in which Anayat Khan gave these breaths, which may be different than we may have learned. They're certainly different than what I had learned. So I'd like to offer them to you in that original form. And we are very fortunate to still have a few students available to us on this earth that remember Anayat Khan having given these practices, and also those that succeeded him, his brothers and cousin, in the leadership of the Sufi movement that kept these practices alive. So, the first breath is we breathe in and out the nose, and we repeat the phrase, I inhale divine light and life, and as we exhale, I radiate divine life and light. So in the first phrase, on the inhalation, it is light and life, and when we breathe out, it is life and light. The phrase turns a bit. Now, Murshid gives these instructions that the breath should be our natural breath. The question is, what is our natural breath? It's good to tune to that rhythm. And he also says that the breath, while being in its natural rhythm, he encourages us to make the breath slightly more fuller and deeper. And so, in a way, we're giving and receiving, we're receiving and we're giving. It's a beautiful practice. And he says to absorb from all of the atmosphere light and life, and to offer it back again. And he says what's more is also contemplating, absorbing from the whole universe love and giving it. So again, the first breath is inhale and exhale through the nose. And I'll repeat the phrases a few times. I know many of you are very familiar with the phrase, but this may be new for others, I don't know. So while we breathe in, we think this phrase, I inhale divine light and life, and as we breathe out, I radiate divine life and light. I inhale divine light and life. I radiate divine life and light. Continue breathing, and I'll say a few more words that Murshid left with us with this practice. He tells us by this practice that the soul is ennobled, that we are given everything we need, that it revivifies us and it purifies us. And he also says that in order to understand other esoteric and mystical practices, this practice needs to be mastered. So there's really very good motivation to learn the practice as Murshid gave it and to continue the practice as he gave it. I inhale divine light and life. I radiate divine life and light. Now the breath changes and we inhale through the nose and exhale through the mouth. This pattern will be familiar to everyone. Inhale through the nose and exhale through the mouth. I inhale divine light and life. I radiate divine life. Think of it as each cell is sipping light and life, and at the same time it's alive and radiating life and light. So all of the cells, the molecules, the finest part of our being, as well as the most material part of our being, is participating in this breath, absorbing and radiating, taking in and giving out. Now the breath comes in through the mouth and we exhale through the nose. We inhale through the mouth and we exhale through the nose, inhaling the phrase and not only the phrase, the vibration of the phrase and the true meaning of the phrase. We're inhaling divine light and life, and we're radiating divine life and light. The last breath is breathing in through the mouth and exhaling through the mouth. We're inhaling and exhaling through the mouth. Again, while holding the concentration, I inhale divine light and life. I radiate divine life and light. Keeping in mind the words of Anayat Khan, Hazrat Anayat Khan, this is the practice that purifies and revivifies and ennobles the soul. It purifies us of our dross. It helps to clarify what some call the ego, some call the nafs, so that the radiance that is not the core of our being can shine through. It's like cleaning the shade, the glass globe on the lamp. Get you a chair in a moment. Hilal, we're concluding a practice here, if you give us a moment. So, Murshid, in the collective interviews, talked about practices, and he said, this concludes the breath practice. However, you can continue with one more breath. And this breath is in the nose and out the nose while repeating the phrases of Nyas, the healing prayer. And he says, if that practice is added to this breath, you say that prayer three times, working with inhalation and exhalation through the nose. Shall we do it? So we'll close our eyes, and I'll repeat the words if you don't mind, and give the instructions. So we inhale. Beloved Lord, Almighty God, and we exhale through the rays of the sun, and inhale through the waves of the air, and we exhale through the all-pervading life and space, and breathe in, purify and revivify me. Hold your breath. And I pray. And now breathe out. Heal my body, heart, and soul. Breathe in. Beloved Lord, Almighty God, breathe out. Through the rays of the sun, and in through the waves of the air, and out through the all-pervading life and space. And breathe in. Purify and revivify me. Hold your breath. And I pray and release. Heal my body, heart, and soul. Last time. Beloved Lord, Almighty God, inhale. Exhale through the rays of the sun, and inhale through the waves of the air, and exhale through the all-pervading life in space. Inhale, purify and revivify me, hold, and I pray. Heal my body, heart, and soul. What an extraordinary prayer, because it is an invocation. Please, is there an extra chair where we can make it available for Hilal so she can be comfortable? Thank you so much. Would you like to move here? You want us to move the chair there, dear? Okay, we can shimmy it around there for you. That's what makes you comfortable. So this prayer Nayaz, what an amazing and extraordinary prayer. If one just did the breath in this prayer, to me this provides us a whole wisdom and understanding. Murshid tells us in the Sufi thoughts that there's one holy book, holy manuscript of nature. And in this prayer, it invokes all those elements. Light, fire, sun, air, etheric element. And in that moment when we breathe in and we hold our breath, it's just that moment where we can control this limited self and a moment where we can take rebirth. Heal my body, heart, and soul. How extraordinary. Think about it. These practices are words, but these words have deep meaning. If you just study them deeply, they will open so many doors for you. I hope and pray for that. And that together in this caravan, we can be agents to support that evolution and growth. God only knows we need to do it. We need to tune ourselves to the highest vibration so that we can offer that to be, you know, a keynote somehow in our own lives and the people that we know in this world, wherever we are, whatever we do. There's a song like that, isn't there? Wherever we go. Are there any questions about the practice? Well, if you'll allow me, I would very much like to present this body of teachings that is will soon be published. It has been a labor of love. Coming through the Sufi Rahaniyat International. They have, under the guidance and leadership of Pir Shabda Khan, who wanted to find a way of enlightening and enlivening the 99 names of God, because some of us, many of us already know that there are some books. But those books are very codified and maybe limited in their interpretation of the names. So Pir Shabda worked with Imam Bilal Hyde, who we many of us know, and he is a student of classical Arabic, so has a clear understanding of the language. And then Murshid Wali Ali Meyer was involved. He's done some of the writing. And Fazl McAdam, who's a psychologist, worked with them as well. So this first part that I'm presenting are some writings by Fazl on the psychological dimension. Because we've all heard it said, it's not healthy to do the spiritual bypass. That can be a form of a kind of hypnotic state that we put ourselves in, but it's not really getting at core issues that we really need to deal with. And of course, those core issues are the path. That's the beauty of the path. As my Tibetan Buddhist teacher would say, he says, everything that comes before me, every difficulty, every person that has a meanness in them is a blessing and a stepping stone to enlightenment. And in ourselves is the same thing. Everything that's there, every wound, everything that we feel we've done that's brought harm, if we truly feel a consideration towards that and learn from it, it's a great blessing. And it helps transform our being to a more aware, enlightened state, God willing. So here Fazl talks about this, and I'm highlighting this because I want people to know that may be watching this in the future online, that if you go on an internet search just for the physicians of the heart, you will find a way to get to this manuscript. And I offer this because this piece has already been presented online. So I feel that I can offer that without violating their copyright. And also, I have been asked to be involved in the project. I was the designer for the cover. Inshallah, it will manifest in its original form. We're looking at that still. And I'm consulting with the designer that's been hired to do the interior. So I feel also intimately involved. I was given this manuscript a few years ago, asked to read it and offer my thoughts. So I offer it to you. And here's another motivation. Many, many people last spring, I think Ibrahim and Halima offered the dance with this divine forgiveness cluster. And many people came to me and asked me to talk about this more. And it made me realize, myself included, how much forgiveness we need to forgive ourselves, and we need to learn a way to forgive others and transform resentment in any way. So I'm editing this, but again, this part of what I'm presenting is already online. They're making some of these teachings available now. And this is on the section, it's a chapter titled Our Psychological Perspective. And it, again, it's by Fazl or Faisal McCottam. Allah is the cosmic self. Ilah is the individuated self. What a beautiful way of expressing the zikr. We've heard all kinds of interpretations. Allah is the cosmic self. Ilah is the individuated self. And in the zikr, they're commingled in this beautiful phrase. The individuated self is embodied in the heart. Heart. It is the ray of the infinite sun, so to speak. Psychologically, these two types of self can be characterized as the impersonal God and the personal God. In conveying spiritual teachings to the West, the aspect of divine individuation has often been bypassed. In conveying spiritual teachings to the West, the aspect of divine individuation has often been bypassed. We would even go as far as to say that this important aspect of God's nature has been trespassed. God as an individuated being is the theme that can crack the ego's shell. If students can find the way to connect with the individuated value, then cosmic value can enter from just that point of light. And so here we can stop for a moment to highlight this through a practice. Anayat Khan talks to us. He tells us to be ever mindful that at the left resides our individuated self, the heart. And to the right, is this unindividuated self, this cosmic self that the soul is contained in. He goes further to say, one could call it the limited self and the unlimited self. The limited self and the unlimited self. Now, here you understand there is great value in this motion that we make. La ilaha. El Allahu. It's a beautiful gesture and deep mystical meaning in this. My individuated self, Allah, Allah, is connected with this cosmic self. You see it? How beautiful is that? So, what I would, and there is this other gesture that comes down, but for this moment, we're going to concentrate on the phrase going from individuated, limited self to unindividuated, cosmic self. The heart and the soul, we're going to connect them with the breath. And here's how it's going to be. There's a chair over here. I think you'd be so much more comfortable. And you may want to bow just a little bit to get the camera going, and that would be wonderful. Thank you so much. So we're going to use the breath. There's a great key to using the breath with the zikr. It has very different influences. One, when we begin the zikr with an exhalation, has a completely different influence than if we begin the zikr with an inhalation. These are deeply beautiful and mystical teachings, which we rarely get to experience. So I'm very grateful for this time, and thank you very much for being here to help in this. So we're going to breathe out, which is a kind of sweeping of our inner chamber. And from the heart, we're going to breathe out. La, aloha. We're going to connect with that soul, that unlimited self, and then we're going to breathe in. El alahu. And we're going to breathe out. La, aloha. El alahu. Now, I just want to talk a little bit more about this because I want to give you some not only metaphysical but real practical things about this breath. If there's anything in this heart, in this individuated heart, that you wish to offer to this cosmic, unlimited self, let the breath exercise it like pulling a splinter very gently from a child's finger or a thorn that has pricked you. Let the breath massage that out of the heart, offering it here to the unlimited self. And let the unlimited self come back to inform the limited self and help heal. Does that make sense? How beautiful is that? But here's the meaning of zikr. Great. Beautiful. So you don't have to do your hand gestures. I'm just trying to do that to help demonstrate these motions. If you want to use the hand gesture, that's fine also. Now you can use the Arabic phrase on the breath. La Allah, El Allahu, or one could think, there is nothing. Only God is. There is nothing. Only God is. So again, sweeping, and let your head kind of move too. There are reasons from a yogic point of view that you would want to maybe take on these movements. It helps to change the chemistry in the body. It does something to the spinal fluid to help loosen it, let it rise. So moving from the limited to the unlimited, and then the unlimited, bringing it. Awareness, understanding, knowledge into the world. Breathing out from left to right and in from right to left. Ah. Ella. There is nothing. Only God is. Breathing out and then filling, letting that crack open and the light come in, filling the heart. Perhaps there's a little vacancy where a splinter or thorn comes out. Let that light go in there, fill it. don't let these be concepts. Feel them deeply in your being. Let them resonate with every fiber, every part of your being. Very simple but very profound practice, and I would invite you to continue that practice. I know that we've offered that before at our center, and people write and say how profoundly they're touched by that practice, so let it be. Continuing with the reading, and you may want to be mindful of this and the beads. We will explore some aspects of the ego structure. Again, this is Fazal Makaidem's voice here, his writing. These are not my words. I offer them to you humbly. We will explore some aspects of the ego structure by examining the wounds that the ego bears and by considering some very central issues of self-value. As we see it, the ego bears two major wounds. Because of the excruciating sensitivity of these deep wounds, the ego sets out with great determination to defend them from being touched and thereby activated. You know, maybe we've been told, why are you being so defensive? Well, we're protecting ourselves in some way. And those that maybe are dealing with people then who are going through a healing process, if you're a social worker or a counselor, or if you've gone through your own process, you know how that happens. When that thorn's about to be plucked out, sometimes we really dig our heels in because we're not sure what's going to happen if that opens up. So he's talking. The way we defend our wounds from being touched by the experiences that your life creates and reflects are specifically personality structures. So again, you know, this touches very deeply. I'm encouraging especially those that work with me, and we're talking about that at the center, this whole body of teachings on character building and the art of personality that Murshid gives us. Hazar Ben Lycon, he talks about this very deeply, how we can use the personality to become a kind of conduit through which the divine can shine, but we must go through this aspect of developing the personality, beautifying it in what ways we can, and that's not one-dimensional, it's multiple dimensions, and developing the character. Again and again, I reflect on that quote by Murshid, which says, gives us the importance of the democracy of the personality and the aristocracy of the soul. You know, this nobility. We have this nobility, but we have to, in some ways, control the personality and be democratic in our personality's dealings with other personalities, so to speak. And I love what he says because he uses music as a metaphor, where he says, it really isn't the fault of the note on the keyboard, one next to the other, that don't harmonize. We don't blame those notes because they haven't, they're not, they're, there's a discord between them. It's the same way with people. Sometimes we have an attunement and we harmonize, and sometimes we don't. But he says the true goal is to become the keynote through which all souls become tuned. So to kind of work with our personality that can maybe be like that beautiful flower that draws the bees in, sweetens them a little bit, the nectar. Or the bee that gives you a sting when you need it to. And some of you know what I mean by that. Going back to the reading. There is a major wound of humiliation, of shame. It is caused by our overall relationship with humanity and by your relationship with your own family in particular. God willing, no one has to deal with this, but I have. I'm sure we all have in some way. Children often feel like failures because there was something the parents needed them to fulfill. And it was something that the child could not do. Confronting this failure, the child feels very unworthy and very ashamed. You know, my initiator and guide for many years, Murshida Vera, this was a great body of teaching she gave, working with the inner child. And if you need that work, there are some teachings of hers. If you just Google Murshida Vera, you'll be able to find your way to some of those teachings. Beautiful practices. And very deeply meaningful if they're unresolved things. Confronting this failure, the child feels very unworthy and very shamed. Your self-identity with this shameful and isolated condition because of the intensity of the wound. It is a defensive act. However, self-identification with your own perceived deficiencies isolates you. Configuring your sense of self in this way disconnects you from the joy of an ongoing relationship with the divine source, a relationship that is the birthright of every soul. The second wound, the deepest layer of wounding, is experienced as being caused by your relationship with God. There's a profound feeling that even God has abandoned you. In this place, you feel you have been abandoned because you have failed to fulfill your divine destiny. Not because you have, but you think you have. This happens. You ask the question, why have you forsaken me? And the ego gives its answer. This is the ego speaking. There must be something wrong with me for me to feel so abandoned. You know, I've always made it my habit to look at these teachings that Murshid has also given us on aspects of suffering, because I think it's only through really looking truly and deeply into suffering that we become fearless on the path. And sometimes I think we have a lot of wonderful experiences at camp, but there may be people that feel isolated because the intention is to always feel uplifted and joyful and happy. But also these camps can be incredible catalysts for digging deep, you see. And then you see how the paradox gets set up. Wow, everyone around me is really very happy and joyful, and I don't quite feel that way, or I feel disconnected. That's what this is talking about. Has anyone ever felt that way? You know, and even within the camp you can go through that. It's an alchemical process that one can enter a kind of dark night of the soul, and it's like, wow, just a few hours ago I was just like, you know, telling jokes and hanging out, and now I want to go hide and cry. You ever go through that? Or I don't know how guys go through it, kick a rock or something. But, you know, I think you also feel that in some ways, or maybe a sense of humiliation or regret or something starts to arise, and it kind of can disconnect us from the greater camp experience. So be aware of it and give it time. Let it be. Take the time. Go into that. If you need someone to talk to, I don't have any answers, but I can listen. I know that there are others here. You know, just find a friend if you need someone to sit with you. And let it be. And do not ever feel ashamed. It is part of a greater energy that is moving in your being. Let it move. If you get sclerosed around it, it will only become crystallized. And we want to stay fluid in the flow. So let it arise and let it disperse. Please, as much as you can, think of that. Good if you want to take notes. I'm very happy about that. So Mersha talks about talks about how the ego gets caught between two major obstacles. One obstacle is trying to fulfill this family whole. There's something wrong. I want to make it right, but I don't really know how. Maybe I don't have the life skills. I don't have the maturity. I don't have the insight. I'm a child. But I want mom, I want dad to be happy. I want my siblings to be happy. I should do something, you know? So that's one obstacle. So one obstacle is trying to fill the family hole. And this leads to a sense of failure. It can lead to frustration. It can lead to a sense of futility, and it can certainly make us a small soul weary. And the other obstacle is trying to fulfill the divine purpose. So we're reaching for something, and we're trying to reach for that and connect with that, but we're kind of weighed down maybe with this other obstacle. But because the soul is trying to accomplish this goal from the place of fundamental isolation, this quest also leads to a sense of failure. So it's like we kind of keep repeating this again and again. It's a pattern that kind of comes in again and again. It's cyclic. But good news is there are practices to follow that can help with this. We have some medicine for you. Beautiful medicine. Since you cannot, so it's like this is us talking to ourselves. It's not really Fazel talking to us, but it's kind of like these are the thoughts that may go through our minds. Since you cannot fulfill God's wish, and you cannot fulfill the family's wish, you always feel like you are a failure. You always feel deficient. And you narcissistically maintain yourself in a self-identification as the lowest of the low. Or some sort of self-identification, whatever that those words are in those quotations. Once you get stuck in this identification, it is very painful. But to let go of the identification, to break its grip, may open up a nightmare for you. As long as you identify with your perceived deficiency, you don't fully feel the pain. It is muted. Once you get stuck in this identification, it is very painful. But to let go of the identification, to break its grip, may open you up to a nightmare. As long as you identify with your perceived deficiency, You don't fully feel the pain. It is muted. So behind the I'm a victim of this, or I'm a child of this, or I'm a, you know, whatever those could be, you know, and we hear them all, and we may be them, or we hear them from other friends. You know, I'm a victim of the, you know, I'm an alcoholic, or I am a drug addict, or I am a victim of incest, or I'm a victim of violence, or I'm a, you know, that these become then the identity, right? And then that becomes who we are, we think we are. And this is a powerful identity that we're holding. But to kind of let go of that can really open us up to think about how vulnerable that becomes, to let go of that defense of identifying ourselves as that. Well, if we're not that, then who are we? Arises the question.
Pain.
We're pain?
That's
what we think. And at first it is extremely painful because it's shocking. It's like almost holding a yogic posture for a really long time. When you start to move out of that, you know, the pain that could be in the muscles or from trying to hold something for so long, it would, you know, of course it's painful to try to move that. You know, it's like going from paralysis to movement. It does take some effort. It's also this judgment of what is pain and suffering, what is joy and what is gladness. When you disengage, and I'm only reading a little bit more, and then I'd really like to get into the practice, but this kind of gives a ground, and maybe it's opening something in each one of us, you know? When you disengage from the identification, the pain hits you in a massive way. Because now the protective layer of your defenses has been broken. Then you feel the shame, the humiliation. You feel that everybody is better than you, that you are lesser than all. The deepest narcissistic wound in the ego structure is this sense of failure and worthlessness and shame. Such a deep wound can ultimately only be healed by God, by the God reality, only through the gracious touch of the all-compassionate and loving being of God can there be a healing for your alienation from the design. Excuse me, from the divine force, and for your shame of having gotten stuck in the lesser identity at this deepest level of narcissism. So again, anyone that's been through a therapeutic process knows that point, that kind of awakening, like, oh my gosh, I've been doing this to myself for so long. And there can be deep sorrow and deep pain and deep regret and deep grief that can arise out of that. Have you found that in your process at all? But there's something beyond that, of course. And I have to say, I don't think it's a harbor that we put our anchor in and we're there. I think it's ongoing. I think there are layers upon layers. You know, it's like St. Teresa of Avila, she talks about peeling the layers of the onion to get to that sweet part. We know what happens when we peel the layers of the onion. Sometimes there's the waterworks can come, so to speak. Very healthy, cleansing, purifying. Thank you. A wonderful thing occurs when we reach our, when we reach, he says you, a wonderful thing occurs when you reach your deepest wound and at the same time find the courage not to defend against the intense feelings that are aroused by reaching it. What power is in that? Andrew Harvey, in his book on Rumi, talks about it like tearing down the scaffolding of the personality that gets formed or conformed around these wounds. Or like it's a house of matchsticks that we can just kind of burn up. But sometimes it takes years. But the beauty is in the process. No need to be in a hurry. Notice each step. That's the path to illumination. That's the path to enlightenment. So a wonderful thing occurs when you reach your deepest wound. At the same time, find the courage not to defend against the intense feelings that are aroused by reaching it. You know, it's homeopathic in a way. I mean, my God, think about it. We get resistance to diseases by having diseases. It's the same thing. Right? We develop a kind immunity. Of mechanism immunity. Within ourselves. Huh?
I'm saying immunity.
It is. It's like a kind of immunity, but a divine immunity, not like a resistance to it. It can become very strong. If you touch that deepest wound, then you have to say, what else is there?
The way out of the pain is through the pain.
And that is... Yes, we could end the class there. But it's really very true. Only through it. The resistance puts up, it creates more pain. I think. Savitri.
There's a beautiful African soul retrieval story. But it's about how overwhelmed we can become when there's so much. And it's like you start to heal the smallest little wound. And then
and we'll talk about that with one of these wazifas, because they talk about it like a salve that's rubbed into the cracks. It's beautiful. It's from the language of Arabic that these meanings come. Ali Khan.
Following his previous psychological work, and with the diamond approach, that is the method of inquiry into those things that we give. Accumulated through our life and our youth of not only just thinking about it, but actually feeling it.
Yeah.
Feeling the pain. Where is it? How does it feel?
Yeah.
Really inquiring into it. That's the principal method.
And again, I turn back to the purification breaths, because the breaths touch on the different levels of our being with the different directions of the breath and feeling the different parts of our being. It can be a great agent for helping in that process. But you're absolutely right, it's not a thinking, it's a deeply feeling process, and often nonverbal. So again, I read, a wonderful thing occurs when we reach your deepest wound, and at the same time find the courage not to defend against the intense feelings that are aroused by reaching it. Then grace comes with a healing touch of love and divine generosity. Then the layer of the ego containing the inner child feels that he or she is being loved all the time. You experience constantly being created by God. You are valued. you are valued.